You might be listening anywhere in the world at WBAI.org. You can become a BAI buddy by pledging $15 or more per month, a sustaining member of WBAI, by going to WBAI.org and just click on Buddy or call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. That means so much to us. When you go to BAI.org, you can just click on Buddy. Make a sustaining donation, a monthly donation of 15 or more, or one-shot deal. Could you do $50 or $100? It's a tax-deductible charitable contribution. $200, $500, $1,000, tax-deductible charitable contribution. Your call makes the difference to ensure that WBAI continues. It is that important. Yes, independent media is essential to the functioning of a democratic society. Please call 212-209-2950 or go to WBAI.org. We can't do this work without you. If you go to WBAI.org, you can just click on Buddy. Thank you so much.
WBAI New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Please stay tuned for Equal Rights and Justice with Mimi Rosenberg.
Equal rights and justice. That's what we're all about, just like Peter Tosh tells us. I'm Mimi Rosenberg, and this is Equal Rights and Justice, where we seek to educate and agitate and organize to empower we the people, for another world is possible, and we are the ones to make it so. And now to stop the genocide against the Palestinian people in our name. Later in the program, we'll take you to the rally where thousands gathered to dump AIPAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, the Israeli lobby juggernaut, a major propaganda machine, and the senators it funds, Schumer, Gillibrand, Torres, Jeffries, amongst a few, to militarily and diplomatically and financially support genocide in our name. Dump AIPAC. But first, we speak with Susan Schnall and Mike Ferna. Now, these are extraordinary people for equal rights and justice for peace. Susan was formerly a lieutenant in the U.S. Navy, a nurse stationed at the Oakland Naval Hospital during the Vietnam War, whose political activities then would lead to a military trial, which we'll find out a bit more about. And Susan has since been committed to issues of peace and justice and building with Veterans for Peace, as is Mike Ferna, who is the National Director of Veterans for Peace, and who we have some funny stories about, but I'll leave that to Susan to tell during the course of our program. But thank both of you for being with us to talk about this most serious period that we're in, and the role of Veterans for Peace as a genocide is being perpetrated in our name. And Susan, I want to begin with you. I opened by saying that you were involved during the Vietnam War. You were a nurse. And I want to know about the consciousness building that took you from an active member of the military to a military trial, and since committing yourself to an organization like Veterans for Peace. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mimi. It's a pleasure to be here, and a pleasure to be here with you all in New York, and with Mike Ferner, who was a conscientious objector during the war. I actually went into the military thinking that I would be undoing the damage that was done by our government and by the military overseas, by taking care of those who were wounded and getting them better and able to go back to their families and friends. But what I found out instead is that, I would help heal these guys, and they would be sent back to the front lines and to duty. And I thought something had to be done to stop the war machine. We tried to get publicity out about a GI and Veterans March for Peace that was taking place October 12th, 1968 in San Francisco, and put posters and handed out leaflets, which is what we did in those days, and found that the posters would be torn down and the leaflets were destroyed. I had gotten the idea of dropping peace leaflets from the use of the United States of dropping flyers on the South Central Vietnamese in Vietnam, urging them to go to protective hamlets to avoid being sprayed by Agent Orange dioxin. These were dropped by the thousands. And I thought, well, if the United States could drop these flyers on a country 8,000 miles away, why couldn't we in the United States drop peace leaflets on military installations? And that's what I did. I had a friend who was a pilot. We loaded a small one-engine plane up with these flyers and dropped flyers announcing the peace demonstration in San Francisco, on Yerba Buena Island, Treasure Island, on Oak Knoll Naval Hospital, on the Presidio, the Army base in San Francisco. And then we went into Alameda Naval Air Station and dropped those flyers on the deck of an aircraft carrier, urging people in the military to speak out against the American war in Vietnam. For that, I was tried by general court-martial and faced 5 years at hard labor in prison. I also wore my uniform in the peace demonstration and spoke out against the war. So it was conduct unbecoming an officer and, I suppose, a gentlewoman, and for disobeying Navy regulations.
And you became known, I love it, as the peace leaflet bomber. Thank you for that. And indeed, conduct becoming an officer and a person of conscience. So thank you for that commitment and that sacrifice. And Mike, what about yourself? We're speaking now with Mike Ferner, National Director of Veterans for Peace. You were a conscientious objector. Talk a little about how you got to that point, and then we're going to both find out how that continues to inform your work and the organization Veterans for Peace. And certainly we want to lift up the issues of Aaron Bushnell, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. Mike?
Thank you, Mimi. And we're involved in a serious as death conversation here, but we also are human beings that are trying to get through this nonsense every day. And I just wanted to thank you for the Peter Tosh song. I haven't heard that one in a long time, and I think I'm going to start every morning with that from now on.
Wonderful.
And to set the record straight, I just want to point out Susan Schnall was a lieutenant junior grade, not a lieutenant. There's a big difference. And I'm going to try to correct her rank inflation whenever I can. I was
Susan,
in the Navy.
You don't have to take that, you know.
Oh, I have a story about Mike Ferner, too, so it's okay.
Anyway, I went into the Navy when I was 18, right out of high school. And as the easiest way of putting it is with a head full of John Wayne movies. And I was a product of the militarized culture that I grew up in that I didn't realize was militarized until later in life. And I got to tell you, we are now working with young veterans and young people in the State Department and other branches of the government who are experiencing this very same thing, where you believe the nonsense and the lies that you've been told about freedom and democracy and the greatest country in the world and so forth. And then you find out that it's an empire. And it does what every empire does. And I went to I was a hospital corpsman, wishing that I had a nurse as politically aware as Susan Schnall, but I didn't. I worked at the Navy hospital in Great Lakes, Illinois, and took care of guys coming back from Vietnam. Very similar situation to what Susan was talking about. And the first thing that opened my eyes was our very first day of hospital corps school. We opened our instruction manual, and right on the first page, it said, and I remember this very well, the purpose of the Naval Hospital Corps is to keep as many men at as many guns as many days as possible. And I thought, oh, man, I didn't know if this is what I signed up for. So then I started taking care of these guys and, you know, bits and pieces of humanity and talking with corpsmen that I became friends with who were older than I was, who knew a little bit about what was going on in the world. And took me almost 2 years to realize this. But I decided I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to become a conscientious objector and I'm going to get out. And then they sent me to an aircraft carrier, one at the same base that Susan leafleted, but a few years later. And I was on that aircraft carrier, and without going into a whole lot of stories about that, that's where my conscientious objector discharge finally came through. And I got involved with the peace movement immediately. Actually, before I was discharged, I got involved with the peace movement out there in the Bay Area. And it has really set me on a course for the rest of my life. Been involved in labor and environmental movements and the peace movement all my life.
Well, I want to ask both of your thoughts on Aaron Bushnell, the active duty member of the Air Force who emulated himself in front of the Israeli embassy in D.C. over the slaughter of innocents. With Israel and its partner, the U.S., having unleashed the bombardment and starvation of the people of Gaza. And I want to contextualize this, which I know Susan will talk about, with Norman Morrison, a Quaker who had burned himself to death as a matter of conscience in relationship to the war. So, saying, I can't live with myself. So let's uplift Aaron Bushnell, who has been denigrated in so many ways by mass media as somebody who had mental problems rather than his act being an ultimate sacrifice of conscience.
Mimi, I when we spoke yesterday, I think I mentioned, you know, there are times, and I believe Mike also reached this point, when what you are doing and what you are participating in just sears the conscience. It is painful to think about what you are doing that is contributing to the ongoing destruction of a people, and that you, in fact, have an active war in an active role in continuing this war. A number of us went through this, certainly during the United States involvement and ongoing destruction of Vietnam. And we said, this war has to stop. And in our own way, and in the way that we could participate, we tried to stop it. Norman Morrison was a Quaker. He was 31 years old. He had three children. He and his wife had spoken for a long time about what they could do to stop that war in Vietnam and the ongoing destruction. And I'll remind our listeners, at that time we were using napalm and white phosphorus against the people of Vietnam. So you had these scenes of children running down the road on fire with that fire burning until it would kill them and it would destroy them. It is similar to the scenes that we see today in Gaza. Norman Morrison also set himself on fire in front of the Defense Department and McNamara's office and said he could no longer live with himself, and he felt that this was what he had to do. He had previously written a letter to his wife, Anne, in which he said, "I love thee, but I cannot live with myself as long as we continue with this destruction in Southeast Asia." And so he set himself on fire. It is the similar action of Aaron Bushnell. And it, to me, represents that terrible pain that says, I am participating. I am a war criminal. This has to stop in my name, and I need to stop it. And it seemed to me that it was from pain that he felt enraged at himself, that he had to do something to stop the United States' continuing destruction of the people of Gaza. And so he took his own life in a way that made sense to him. And I think we have a duty to respect that decision of Aaron Bushnell. It was the supreme sacrifice, and it was a supreme sacrifice to try to save the lives of other people, to try to say, this has to stop, and I will no longer participate in this genocide.
You know, Mike, I was just reading about, and I want your thoughts on this, there is something called the Hamas Hunting Club, which has been set up by U.S. soldiers within the IDF, which is something to discuss. A group of American soldiers fighting in Israeli Defense Force units in Gaza are under review now after creating a social media profile dedicated to sharing images of blindfolded Palestinian captives and calling for people to join the hunt, I quote, for Hamas. The Hamas Hunting Club has published a series of images since its creation in November, showcasing dozens of blindfolded Palestinian detainees sitting on the floor with their arms bound together, naked, etc. Your thoughts on that in response to what both you and Susan were saying about your commitment as individuals to do no harm, in effect, and where that takes you now in to the specific activity of Veterans for Peace, which is to look at the transfer of arms to Israel and your protest of that, which we will, of course, get into. But your thoughts on this perversion, the Hamas Hunting Club, U.S. soldiers fighting within the IDF.
Well, Mimi, you're right. That is perverse. It's terribly perverse. And the only perversion worse than that is committed by the, as I call them, the madmen arsonists who run our country and take the people to war or begin their own war or fund a proxy war. This is the greatest perversion. And out of the Nuremberg tribunals came the term that aggressive war, a war of aggression, is the utmost war crime, because from that, all other war crimes come. So when you take people and you, or you take a society and militarize it, but when you take individuals and you put them into war, terrible things happen automatically to everybody. Nobody comes out of that. Nobody comes out of the military the same. Nobody comes out of the war unchanged at all. And so, yeah, this particular group of soldiers are perverse, but nothing should excuse that behavior. But on the other hand, let's look at the people who created the conditions for this perversion to surface. And beyond that, Susan was talking about the pain that people go through trying to right their conscience to the situation. And think of all, and this goes for IDF soldiers, this goes for everybody involved in a war. Think of the pain that they go through. It's called moral injury. You've been told you're off on God's mission, or however they put it, freedom and democracy. That's what you've been told. You go in there and you do things that no human being should ever do. You see things nobody should ever see. And it destroys you inside, either a little bit or a lot. And you deal with that. And we wonder why people come out of these situations and do insane, violent things to themselves, to people, drink themselves to death, beat up their family. You know, why does this happen? You know, well, do the madman arsonists give a damn about this? No, they're making money. That's all they know. And they're going to run the government in such a way that they keep making money. And one of the things Veterans for Peace is trying to do is get beyond putting out the fires of these madmen arsonists and taking their matches away, which means no more First Amendment rights for corporations, no more lobbying in Congress, no more AIPAC lobbying, no more any constitutional rights that corporations have gotten to the point where they run the country. So, yeah, what's going on there is perverse and it should be condemned. But let's look at the larger perversion of a government that has militarized a society to the point where they think we're supporting this. And the people in Washington and the people in the mainstream media who don't understand the depth and the breadth of the opposition to this madness are living in a little delusional bubble. And for one thing, the Democrats' bubble is going to burst pretty big this November.
Well, let me
just take it. I mean, I would like to continue with what Mike said. I think that's absolutely true. And part of the way that the military and the war industrial complex controls the general population is by denigrating and racializing the conflict. And so we, in Vietnam, we're told these people were, quote, called gooks because they looked different. And so you had the ability to go in there and kill and destroy as you wanted to because these were not Americans. We have been, I think, infiltrated in the press. And if it's not spoken directly, it's alluded to that Palestinians look different, right, from Israelis, and Israelis look at them and say, oh, we can destroy these people. It is part of the ongoing racism in this country, and rather the systemic racism that I think is part and parcel of the ability of the United States to destroy other people.
Thank you.
So we have the military-industrial complex. We have racism that says these people are different from us, so we can do what we want. And that certainly seems to be what is going on in Israel today. It is extraordinary to me and so horrendous that we can do this, that we as a society allow it to go on, and that the media kind of encourage it with the types of stories they write. People are different from us, and we see that going on within our own country. So we have extraordinary responsibility to say to the American people, we have been to war, we have been your soldiers, and we won't do that anymore. And I think we have a way of talking that says, no more, no more. This is encouraged by the military-industrial complex. Racism is encouraged by the powers that be. It's a way to keep people down and to keep them working in the jobs that we say that they ought to have. So as veterans, we feel a responsibility to talk to the powers that be in this country to say this has to change and to say that we will no longer be complicit in your wars, both the wars that you perpetrate outside the country and the wars that are perpetrated against people of color in this country.
And we're speaking with Susan Schnall and Mike Furna, Veterans for Peace, and I want to move right now to the issues of the letter that the affirmative action that you all are taking along with other organizations urging a criminal investigation of Biden weapons to Israel at various State Department offices, which will be taking place. So, Mike, why don't you start us on that conversation and that action that Veterans for Peace is engaged in?
Thank you. Well, it's a tribute to the power of democracy in a way. Very briefly, that letter was written by a friend of mine here in Toledo, Terry Lodge, who I've worked with for decades on all sorts of peace issues, environmental issues. He's represented many of us who have been arrested for civil disobedience, protesting the war, and so forth. He spent days putting that together, 13 pages, 35 footnotes, and it's a chapter and verse of the criminal violations of federal law and five federal laws and one executive department policy. It spells out very, very clearly how the United States is breaking these laws. The administration, of course, the Congress is funding it. But our letter was directed to the Inspector General of the State Department, the person who is supposed to oversee the legality or the illegality of State Department actions. And we spelled out very clearly the various ways. Every time the State Department okays a weapons transfer to Israel, how they're breaking these laws. And we wanted to do a couple of things to highlight this ongoing criminality, but also to let people in the State Department and other federal departments know that they individually are violating the law. And just because the United States doesn't recognize the International Criminal Court, I think we've seen with South Africa taking Israel to the ICJ, International Court of Justice, that maybe at some point the United States is not going to be able to avoid these international laws, and they're breaking U.S.
So specifically, federal law, right? Though, specifically, you're saying that the conventional arms transfer policy or the transfer of military weaponry from the U.S. to Israel is violating any one of a number of laws. So tell us how you seek to pursue this and just give us some of the highlights along with Susan, given the time that we have. We'll continue to follow through on this, but tell us how you will be pursuing this allegation or series of allegations, which I think are enormously well documented, but highlight some of them for our audience to understand the issue of the violations of U.S. Law and policy via the transfer of arms from the U.S. to Israel to commit genocide and commit genocide, frankly, in our name.
Well, a Veterans for Peace member in upstate New York, Jack Gilroy, came up with the idea of delivering these to State Department offices in the United States. And so we put together a campaign where as many of our chapters as possible, there's 19 State Department offices across the United States, and we covered 16 of them in this campaign. And our members are delivering these yesterday, today, yesterday.
These
and today.
Being letters of accusation or?
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. These letters are addressed to the Inspector General of the State Department. They make it nearly impossible to get it to that person. But we did what we could to get it to the Inspector General. And then we are working from the bottom up to get it to the State Department offices. We've also been in contact with Josh Paul, the State Department official who resigned a few months ago over these weapons transfers. And he has gotten us in touch with the couple of State Department staffers that Susan and I and some other members of Veterans for Peace are going to meet with in Washington next week so that we can talk with these people and let them know that they're supported. And they are going to then take this letter and get it inside. And we hope many staffers who are feeling like they're violating the law and their consciences are plaguing them, that they'll step forward as well. So, you know, it gets down to the old saying of, you know, who's going to guard the guards? You know, that's the thing the umpire always worries about.
And for additional information, please check out the website at veteransforpeace.org. There's additional information on the website on how your listeners can participate in this campaign. And we need everybody. It's Veterans for Peace, and it's also all of your listeners who can join with our campaigns. There's information that's being put together of all the different cities, where the chapters are, and how they are, in fact, contacting the government and handing in the letters. So please, again, check out veteransforpeace.org for additional information. It's an extraordinary campaign. We need all of the publicity and all of the public support that we can get. Thank you.
Susan, I'll highlight just very quickly some of the violations of U.S. law by virtue of these arm transfers. What is the essence of what you're using as a hook to say that the transfer of arms, which are being used to destroy Gaza culturally, to raise it, and to kill way more, no question about it, than 30,000 of its citizenry through bombardments and other acts of brutalization of the civilian population. Give us some of the highlights of what you think is being violated by this weapons transfer.
There's a number of things, and just quickly, you know, when we go back to the Geneva Convention against genocide, it is something that we in the peace movement have talked about for many, many years. When the United States transfers weapons to Israel, it is part of the complicit involvement in committing genocide against the people of Gaza. That is, for starters, that is something that we have talked about certainly during Vietnam. And what becomes so horrendous is we think about the Geneva Conventions against genocide and how much and what happened during the Holocaust and how those people who were so terribly affected during the Holocaust, their descendants are now committing genocide against another group of people. And that has to stop, and that has to stop in our name. So for most of us, that is the starter of why it is illegal, immoral for the United States to be involved in the Israeli destruction of Gaza, that we all are part of it. Our tax dollars go into the war and the military-industrial complex. So we're all complicit in one way or another, and it becomes our responsibility to stop this.
So stop the transfer. Stop the money. Yes. Stop the transfer of arms to Israel in our name to destroy, to utterly destroy and devastate the population of Palestinians in Gaza and the entire infrastructure and livability of Gaza, which is part of, no doubt, ethnic cleansing of the entire population out of Gaza. Well, I really hope that both of you will come back, tell us how the campaign is progressing. And I do want to again say that Veterans for Peace has over 100 chapters in the U.S. And since 1985, it has exposed the true cost of war and militarism. Its goal is to abolish war as an instrument of national policy. Mike Forner, National Director Susan Schnall, for your sacrifices and your conscience, lead the way, and you do. We can't thank you enough, and we will all get on board. And just, Mike, again, tell us how people can get in touch with Veterans for Peace so that we can join in and stand arm in arm, hand in hand, with Veterans for Peace in this campaign to stop the transfer of weapons.
Thank you, Mimi. Well, the simplest way is just to go to our website, which is our name, veteransforpeace.org, and you'll find information and contact information there.
You're wonderful. Mike Farner, Susan Schnall, we'll definitely have you back. We'll keep our eye on this campaign, and we'll join with it. And we'll soon find out how it's progressing. No more genocide in our name.
Thank you, Mimi.
Thank you, Mimi. Thank you both. And we are going to now dump AIPAC. Yes, we are. We're facing a moral and governmental emergency of epic proportions. The Israeli government's genocide of Palestinians escalates by the day. And the Biden administration, Congress, and the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, are its biggest enablers. So we go now to a demonstration where Jewish New Yorkers and people of conscience are marching on the headquarters of AIPAC to expose its warmongering and racism and to tell our elected officials, your constituents demand a ceasefire now, an end to the flow of U.S. weapons to Israel, and that we want you to dump AIPAC. Let's listen.
Kamigari, I know you are a long-time housing tenant rights activist and frankly have established yourself all over the world as somebody dealing with the issue of land rights, tenants' rights. Do you see any correlation, or you're here at this demonstration dealing with free Palestine from the river to the sea? Do you see any kind of connectivity between your work in housing and the whole issue of the bombardment and the ethnic cleansing of Gaza?
Absolutely. It's all about land. Israel wants the land that Palestinians have stewarded for generations, for hundreds of years. They want to take it away, and they've taken away a good deal of it. And that's what the war is about. But the real estate industry is doing the same thing, getting control of land so they can rent it, they can sell it, and make a profit. Nothing else. It's not to provide housing for people. They don't care whether people sleep on the streets as long as they can collect rent.
So you also understand the issue of a free Palestine within the broader context of what? Settler colonialism or the whole nature of... Talk about that, if you will.
Absolutely. Israel's a settler colonial state, just like the United States was established by taking land from native people and disconnecting them from the land, which they did not consider private property. And they turned it into private property to be owned only by, at the founding of this nation, only by citizens who were not indigenous people, who were not people of color, were not slaves or former slaves. It is one and the same with different characteristics, but it's all about gaining control of land and taking from those who happen to have lived on the land and stewarded it for many years. Those who squatted on land, those who occupied buildings that were vacant because they didn't have housing. They are breaking the rules on which this nation was established and settler colonialism is based. So the other question, Tom and Gotti, is to what extent do you see also in response to the outpouring of people like yourself and large numbers of young people and people from academia that we are also, because you've lived through this in some ways, the issue of a new McCarthyism on the rise to try to silence people as well. Is that part of what this struggle must be about, a response to those people who are equate Zionism with settler colonialism and uncouple it from Judaism and see all of this as part of a imperialist or colonialist endeavor and thus must be silenced? Palestinian people have been fighting for over 75 years to return to the land which their people have lived on for centuries, and land that was taken away by colonizers, Israeli settlers. And one of the great things I think that's happened with the fight back here and the fight against AIPAC and the Israeli war machine is there's a recognition that there's a universal aspect to this. It's not just in Palestine. This is a global, just as global capitalism is destroying the environment. So do you see this as part of a new McCarthyism really coming into being to silence people? I don't think McCarthyism ever died. I think there's still certain acceptable things that elected officials can say and do. Thank you, Tom and Gotti.
We are here today because AIPAC is suppressing American public sentiment. We are here today because they are subverting American democracy. How many polls do we need to see to understand that the American people are in favor of an immediate and permanent ceasefire? Our vision of extending humanity to Palestinians. And the one people are appalled on extending that humanity, when the residents are appalled on stopping additional economic and military funding to Israel, a majority say they oppose that too. We have to remember that every day because of AIPAC, millions of dollars that work to create an impression that is not real. Because we know that when you ask of any party, when you ask of any race, of any age, they will come back to you and say, we need a ceasefire now. And I have to quote my congresswoman, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who said that AIPAC is the NRA of foreign policy. We have to be clear about that, because it is up to us to make it explicit to every single person in this city that we hear what they believe and that we will deliver that in spite of what AIPAC does and in spite of who AIPAC funds. Are you ready for a free Palestine? Are you ready for a free Palestine? Then I must say one last thing, which is that it has been
it has become harder and harder to wake up every morning and see more and more Palestinians massacred with our tax dollars. As our national leaders fumble over themselves to justify the actions that are simply unjustifiable. But we have to remember that hope is not a feeling. In words of Maryam Baba, hope is a discipline. Hope is a practice. So when you wake up and you feel tired and you wonder, can you make that call to your Congress member? Can you go to that protest? Can you attend that rally? You must remember that if you practice hope, you will come to believe hope. Palestinians are counting on us to practice hope. Palestinians are counting on us to be disciplined in our hope. And we must give them that on our route to giving them the ceasefire that they so deeply and desperately deserve in this moment. So my final question is, are you ready to keep practicing hope?
We know who they are. We will not stop fighting. We will not stop demanding. And that we will continue to struggle alongside our people in Gaza. They are our compass. And we will struggle until APAC crumbles and until Palestine is free from the river to the sea. We know that AIPAC is a far-right lobbying group. That is clear as day to all of us. We know that they are sending millions around the country to fund those who are speaking out in favor of genocide. They are funding those who are complicit in genocide. And more than that, they are bribing our politicians, our electeds, not to be silent about the genocide, but to be openly, proudly complicit in a genocide that is unfolding through our tax dollars. AIPAC does not represent minorities. It does not care about our safety. It does not care about Jewish safety or Muslim safety or minorities. In fact, it's the opposite. The most far-right forces in the United States, they are AIPAC's allies. And that is why we're out here today. We are here to expose AIPAC for what it is. And the funders of ethnic cleansing, and we are here to say anyone who takes money from AIPAC is complicit in genocide. We're not stopping. Dump! Dump! Ceasefire now!
Talk about what's brought you to this demonstration and why AIPAC is the focus.
AIPAC is the focus because it's important to expose that they actually are not fighting for or doing anything to defend Jewish safety or any minority rights. They're doing the exact opposite. They're allying themselves with forces of the far right that are growing in the U.S., the ones that are attacking our health care and our housing and immigrant rights, and that are openly racist. They are actively funding and proudly doing so a genocide. And that's why we've chosen AIPAC as a target. And that's why there are so many people out here today that will continue to come out and continue to push and expose AIPAC for what it is.
Can I just ask you, for those people, since it's really arising, as you're very well aware of, McCarthyism that is trying to shut people down, chill speech.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, my own union just got a letter from the House Committee on Labor and Education trying to dox its members for drafting a resolution in support of a ceasefire. So it's pretty serious, pretty severe. As we know, they even forced out a president from Harvard. So how do you uncouple Zionism from Judaism, and how do we not see that AIPAC is not a defender of Jewish security, but a perpetrator of settler colonialist project that would Judaicize all of Palestine from the river to the sea? Your thoughts?
Well, we know that Zionism is an ethno-nationalist Jewish supremacist project. It's a political project. And from the inception of Zionism over 130 years ago, long before Israel existed, there were Jews who were openly calling themselves anti-Zionists. And there were Jews who were actively fighting the emergence of Zionism and saying back then, this is in the late 1800s, that Zionism does not represent all Jews, and that Zionism is not the answer to Jewish safety today.
And you are?
Sumaya Awad.
And are you with a particular organization?
Yes, I'm with the Ardada Justice Project and Democratic Socialists of America.
Thank you. Tell us why you're here today.
I'm here because as a Jewish person, I just am sickened by the carnage that's happening every single day in Gaza, and I can't take it anymore. And I'm really tired of this lie that all Jews necessarily support Israel. I don't think Israel's a good idea. I think it's unfair from the get-go. It doesn't make me feel safer as a Jew, and I'm certainly not going to stand by while this kind of devastation is wreaked upon the population of Gaza in my name. That's the part that I think many of the people at this rally who are Jewish have such a hard time with. It's being done in our name, and we're here to say absolutely not.
So you uncouple Zionism from Judaism?
100%. I mean, look, I know there are a lot of Jews who feel a real connection to the state of Israel. I happen not to be one of them. But, you know, whether you do or don't have a strong connection to the state of Israel, what's happening right now is devastation and will lead to ruin. Even if you are supportive of Israel, there has to be either a two-state solution that really gives Palestinians their own land and not like little bantustans. It has to be a continuous...
Well, what would you say to a one-state, secular, unitary state from the river to the sea? Two states seems to me to be a perpetuation of apartheid structure.
I agree with you. That would be my preference. Nobody knows what's realistic. But I agree with you. My preference, I don't believe in any ethno-states. And my preference would be a secular one state where Palestinians can come back to their homes.
And with Palestinians at the table to make their own decisions.
100%. You know, I don't know what's realistic, but I know that the only option, the only alternative is devastated bloodshed, and it's a lopsided letting of blood. It's not that an equal number of people are dying. We had 1,200 Israelis who were killed. That was terrible, absolutely reprehensible. And now we have over 30,000 Palestinians. I'm sure it's way more than that, who are dead, and many more will die. It's not an equal, one state has all the power, let's face it, and that's Israel. And AIPAC upholds that power.
What do you think that AIPAC has to do with all this, and the ADL and groups like that who continually profess that they are the Democrats, that they are the ones who are protecting the security of the much historically beleaguered Jews, although they believe that it's a nation rather than a religion, but notwithstanding that, where do you think AIPAC fits in to the sustaining this onslaught which has gone on for minimally 75 years, but now in its most brutal form?
I mean, I think AIPAC really represents a powerful nuclear state. They have an incredible amount of political power. They really control a lot of politicians in this country. The truth of the matter is they don't really represent the majority of Jewish opinion in the United States. I mean, I'm not saying most Jews in the United States would be for a one-state solution. I don't believe that, unfortunately. But on the other hand, people do want peace, and I think AIPAC is really representing the most extremist right-wing aspects of Israel, which unfortunately is a large part of Israel right now. But this is a very difficult situation we're in right now, but AIPAC should be a real target of progressive Jews in the United States.
And you are?
My name is Jenny Dubnow.
Thank you for being here.
Of course, me too.
What brings you to a protest against AIPAC specifically?
I think it's important to know that very, very little, if nothing, would ever keep us away from this. We detest any part that our country has to play in this unspeakable genocide of innocent Palestinian civilians.
Is this about settler colonialism equals genocide? Your thoughts on that?
I totally agree with that. This is settler colonialism, but at this point it's also terrorism, because Netanyahu is trying to terrorize and destroy an entire population in order to get them to force Hamas to give back the hostages. That is terrorism as well as genocide. But we're targeting AIPAC because they fund the Zionist power in the United States that keeps people in this country and our elected officials from understanding that they're supporting genocide. We all grew up, in my generation, we grew up thinking no one would ever do that again. No one would ever turn away from a genocide happening when we saw the Holocaust. But they're doing exactly that, and we're trying to force our elected officials, to force Biden, who's the one person in the entire world who can pick up the phone and have some kind of impact to stop the genocide. And he's being
prevented from that because of the strength of the Zionist political movement in this country, and AIPAC trumps that.
And I'm speaking to a former political prisoner. We are going through an aggressive rise, some people say it never stopped, of McCarthyism.
Well, we hate to cut down, but we have reached our time limit. That was Laura Whitehorn that you were listening to. And we're saying, as did she, dump AIPAC, let Gaza live, not in our name, free, free Palestine. I'm Mimi Rosenberg. You've been listening to Equal Rights and Justice, and we wanted to hear from you, the people, not in our name. No, Israel, you can't commit genocide in our name. No, Biden, you can't commit genocide in our name. So remember, educate, agitate,